Good morning and welcome to the How You Do Anything is How You Do Everything, Year Long Radio Show. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Ashwini.
So our assignment from yesterday was around, are you a compassionate person? And the focus was, when are you least compassionate? Record and listen.
Uh-huh.
So here's our first caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Good morning. This is Nancy.
Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning. Yes, I was looking at this about who I'm, you know, who is, but the question was how...
When are you least compassionate?
When I'm least compassionate. And, of course, when I looked at it, it was I'm least compassionate to myself. And it's kind of a subtle thing a lot of times in that, well, what I'm noticing lately is when there's a perceived wrong and I have to justify that in my head, I seem to have to justify that out loud. And to me, that is being, is that is a not a compassionate thing for me to do because I'm staying out of the present moment every time I do that. And
So, Nancy, is it, that, is it that something or someone says or does something and you hear that,
yes,
perhaps and correctly, that yes. You're being criticized. You're being kind of accused of doing something wrong. And and so that's when you need to then jump in and justify yourself.
Well, it's either me or to someone I love, you know, and if the arguments begin in the head, like, well, you know, this shouldn't be this way because, and how dare that happen. And, you know, it's like there has to be some kind of a dialogue to justify that, you know, that
a rebuttal.
We're okay, yeah, rebuttal, right. We're okay, and the other person
is. Right. Right. And so then, now have you been told that makes you an uncompassionate person, or an insight?
First,
it just dropped in.
It gets kind of cloudy because I think on one hand that's kind of a normal. I mean, there's nothing wrong with any of it, and there's a place of acceptance, but it's that place of having to noodle it around in the head and just kind of, take me away from whatever's going on in the moment. Causing some stress in the body. I can, when I drop into the body, I feel the stress. So that's why I want to kind of let it all go and yet not stuff the feelings or anything like that. So.
Right. And with your point about the present moment, when we stay in the present moment, we can see more clearly, what's actually happening. So maybe the person didn't say that, or maybe that's not what's really happening, or maybe I have taken personally something that is completely somebody else's, or all kinds of things that we can see that free us from that if we can stay here long enough to see it.
Oh, yes, that's absolutely true. And then, of course, if I can stay here long enough, I begin to see or feel the compassion for the other person and, know that this is something that comes from a deep hurt and that kind of thing. And if I'm busy doing the other thing, I can't get to that place of compassion.
Yeah. Boy, that is such a good point. that when we when we're able to stay here, which is where compassion resides,
yes.
It's so easy to see the suffering of somebody else, because happy, satisfied, fulfilled people don't tend to be unconsciously insensitive. They don't tend to be hateful.
Yeah.
So we can see that these things that conditioning wants to jump on are exactly the kinds of places, things that conditioned mind, ego, wants us to be involved with. So
exactly.
Somebody said something mean to me. Well, blah, 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 blah. So I have to go over all the mean things that I could say to them. And right from center we go, I don't want to do any of that.
Don't want to go there, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's good to see, isn't it? Good to see that you are a compassionate, unique expression of life, and ego isn't. An expression of life, perhaps, but not prone to living in compassion.
It almost feels like that I'm working to be a compassionate warrior, because it does take being, constantly looking at this and constantly being in the present moment. So
yes, it does. It takes tremendous resolve, doesn't it? And a la Gary Zukav, of course, as soon as we tap into that willingness and resolve, life just seems to hop right on board with all the support we need. Yeah.
And it's only ego that feels that it's this juicy, drama-laden thing that needs to be hashed and rehashed and played and replayed.
Ego is a reality TV program, right, with all the melodrama.
All right.
Thanks, Nancy.
Thank you. All right.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Nancy. Sherry, what I was saying about that, the way in which ego has taken over what compassion means, that it's not possible that part of what I heard in that conversation is...
Darn, Ashwini, you just went away for me. I don't know if you did for everybody. You kind of sound a little bit underwater, and then you disappeared for a while.
Well, all right.
Yeah.
I'm just going to bring on the next caller, Sherry. Here we go.
Boy, it's like, can you hear me now? As soon as you say, I'm just going to bring on, you're clear as a bell. So we'll keep trying, okay?
Okay, here we go. Next caller, you're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
This is Gail in Flagstaff.
Hello, Gail.
I'm happy to be here and participating.
Mm-hmm.
What I've really seen with this work, this whole retreat, is the how you do anything is how you do everything, is it's just day after day about how conditioning keeps me from participating.
Uh-huh.
Just been amazing.
And if we want to make participation, how would we say it's related to compassion? It's one of the expressions of compassion?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we could see why ego is so eager to stop people from it.
Absolutely. And yes, because then you don't reach out and do what life needs you to do at that moment.
Yes. And we move into a place of feeling separate, isolated with ego, of course.
Yeah.
And then ego can step in and say, look for the evidence, you're just not a compassionate person. You're just not an open-hearted, loving person. What's wrong with you? You could be, but you're choosing not to be.
Yeah, and then there's a whole story about that, about holding back and all that kind of stuff. And what was really exciting for me to see is that it's not just my, the however you want to say that, with conditioning. But my dad's whole modus operandi was to hold back. And when he was dying, I asked him, you know, it's like, well, what is the one thing you regretted? You know, it's like a teenager asks those kind of questions of someone. And he says, I wish I hadn't held back so much.
Uh-huh.
And I had no idea. This was like 25 years ago. I had no idea what he was talking about. But I think this is what he was talking about.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Yeah, because I would project that ego comes in with a conversation. It's not this direct, but it's you don't want to be vulnerable because you don't want to make a fool mm-hmm. of yourself. What will yes. people think? What's going to be the retaliation if they see how vulnerable you are? You know, you need to protect yourself. You need to be careful.
And don't be stupid. That was the big thing.
Don't
in our
be
house.
Stupid.
Don't be stupid. Yeah. So it's a whole legacy kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It was amazing to see how that story gets passed on.
Yes. So anyway, well, and one thing about that, Gail, before we move on, the process I think is universal, but what mm-hmm. you're pointing at that is I think helpful for us to explore is what's the unique flavor of this.
Mm-hmm.
So in your house it was don't be stupid. Now it takes a fair amount of awareness practice to get from don't be stupid to holding back and being in conversation with ego to try to protect yourself from the dangers of other people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
yeah. So good to see how those messages come down through the family and solidify that orientation to life.
Mhm. Like there's no other option. That's just how you do it.
Yes. Yeah, that's the right way.
Mhm. Mhm.
Smart. It's smart. It's the smart way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this book is just showing every day however I do the assignment or don't do the assignment. It's just sometimes you can dip your toe in, you know, but other times stay away from the water completely, you know. It's been fun, really fun.
Good.
Yeah.
Good and illuminating.
Yes, very much so.
Fun and illuminating. It's awareness practice. All right. Thank you, Gail.
Oh, okay.
Talk to you soon, huh?
Okay, all right. I was going to mention what I did for the assignment today, if you want.
Oh, please. Yes,
okay.
Please.
So what I notice when you're least compassionate, the question, mm-hmm. is that when I'm something threatens ego and it pushes my body into fight or flight. And so suddenly
uh-huh.
I'm dealing with adrenaline or cortisol or whatever those stress hormones are. And then I have these whole reactions, you know, my voice is shaking or my hands are shaking or I'm, you know, whatever. And then that's tied to emotion, you know, like fear
uh-huh.
or anxiety. When I'm in caught like that, compassion goes out the window.
Yeah, for everybody, right? Because
ego
has moved into only one is going to survive, and I'm the one.
Yes. And it's mm-hmm. like that. In one of your books, you had an image of when you're drowning, float.
Uh-huh.
And it's what I realized is when you're in fight or flight, you know, you're flailing around in the water like you're drowning, and the more you flail, you know, the more you're all wrapped up in that whole fight for survival. But if you can remember to relax and float, and then you're back there, present, then everything's fine.
Yes.
And
that's why.
Flows in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's why we have such strong encouragement in those situations to turn all the attention to the breath.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just, I'm breathing in. breathing out. And because then there's nothing left over to maintain ego.
Yeah.
Right? And now you're back with the body and you can feel the body calm down and it all passes. And which again is why ego is so eager for us to be in the head, as far away from the body and the breathing as we can get.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow.
So thank you.
Good to see. Good for health. physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, in all ways, because cortisol and all that stuff, it's just not good for us.
No.
Yeah.
Not as a steady diet, especially.
Especially, yeah. All right. Thanks, okay. Gail.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Gail. Can you hear me, Sherry?
Yes.
Good. Well, what was coming up for me in both the conversation with Nancy and with Gail is how participation is to take part in. It is a non-ego place, which is one of separation.
Uh-huh.
That compassion is being with. And so we can only be with when we're in the present moment. And to recognize the flavor, as you were talking about, of how the universal process of separation is acted out for you. Like, what are you told that causes you to hang back and be in and be present to life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really interesting one to explore, isn't it? Because it doesn't present the way it's interpreted. Right? So we're given all these messages, and they mean something in the sense that we act out from them in very specific ways, but we're not allowed to see the connection. Because once we see the connection, we go, well, so I can't be with other human beings because, well, I don't believe that. I don't want to live like that. But if it's a matter of being stupid or being vulnerable or defenseless, well, then, I don't want to fall for any of that. I don't want to be fooled into any of that.
Exactly. And so I think that's what our practice tools encourage us to do, which is to recognize the universality of the bamboozle, which is how can I get that experience of separation and non-compassion. And then how does it get active specifically? I mean, it's like the two-handed recording exercise, because then you get tuned into what's really going on for the person being subject to the messages that are being given, which are actually not related to the process that I'm in, which is to separate me and move me away from compassion.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's very good. So that could be the koan. Right there, it could be that simple and straightforward. What is between me and compassion in this moment? So in the little, we are here to end suffering. If I am suffering, it's because I am choosing something over ending suffering. So what's happening right now that's keeping me from compassion?
Yeah,
that's a great moment by moment koan.
Here's the next caller.
All right.
You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself? Hello? Well, that person just dropped off the queue. So
darn.
I'll see if I can bring them back.
Because we know they want to participate.
Okay, hang on one second, Sherry. I don't think I can. They didn't get back in the queue, so let me try someone else.
Belt. All right.
All right, next caller, you're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, dear.
All right, let me give someone else a shot. Here you go. Next caller, you're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Kate calling from Seattle.
Hey, hello, Kate.
Hello,
third time is the charm, yes.
Well, lucky for me.
Lucky for us.
I loved the conversation yesterday and the conversation today, And what one of the things that struck me and that the last caller says is, was however I'm doing the assignment or not doing the assignment, I'm seeing so much. And that's what I'm just loving that about this focus this year, that it's so personal, but that it keeps bringing it back to so such a process-oriented place and being able to see the how in everything, which ego was doing a very good job of disguising.
Isn't that something?
Isn't
that amazing? Yeah, because it didn't seem like that was the case, did it?
No,
not
at all.
We started doing this.
Yeah. So that's been really incredible. To add on, I really agree with the, well, I loved how the question was phrased, when am I most and when am I least compassionate, because it was a nice way to work around ego being able to try to say that, you know, to chime in about those. So there were definitely, gave them their more concrete places to look. And then I saw that, yes, with myself, and yes, when I'm listening to the voices, and yes, with others, when I'm projecting qualities that ego doesn't like. But I also, I noticed there's a real physical element that that comes with that. And what I've noticed is when I'm doing more complex tasks, like working, when I get deep into thought or concentration, if I don't have a coming back, that there's a lack of compassion for the body where, like, I don't take breaks, I don't stop to eat. Like, sometimes, you know, I won't even stop to go to the restroom because there's just this constant push from ego to keep working and keep focused.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, Kate. That's what it says, right?
Right.
What we're seeing is the real point is keep her controlled. Provide as much suffering as possible. There you are, conscientious, hardworking human being, trying to do the very best you can. This is another one of those places where it's just presented in such a different way than what's actually going on, right? So you're really working hard. But what ego is doing is over there going, look, I can even keep her from going to the restroom. Watch this. And so the gap between those two, the authenticity that's in the body, they're in the moment doing the task, and that separate, the illusion of a separate self that is calling the shots. To me, what you started out with was such a clear portrayal of that, that that's what we're getting to see in these exercises. Here's life, the intelligence, whatever, intuition, dropping it in, and then we get to see what egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate does to try to grab the attention, try to make it something else, try to insert itself into keeping you on track with what you should be thinking and believing.
Yes, I think that's definitely what's happening. And I guess the more you're paying attention, the more you're likely to catch it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I did notice in those working situations, if when it's not compassionate, it makes, like, there's an association with not liking work because there's no compassion there.
Yes.
And if I set an alarm and keep checking back in, I actually find that I really have a lot of fun in almost anything.
Yes, 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 yes to that. Because because life is animating you, right? You are able to do what you do as well as you do it because you're being animated by intelligence, right? Ego is, its whole deal is trying to interfere with that and get get the attention for itself, right? So if it can set up a situation where you need to look to it for guidance about your work, then it's going to tell you that it's really unpleasant. Probably the people you work with are too. And it's too hard. It's too stressful. It's just miserable. You need to be somewhere else doing something. All of that happens in ego, right? Not in the body, not in the work, not in the situation. And seeing the difference there, yes, you get to realize when I'm here, I'm having fun. I enjoy it. I enjoy what I get to do.
Yeah, and it's really true. I do enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, probably like most people on this call, you have worked really hard to get to that into that position.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, people go through school, they train, they take jobs, they work up, they do whatever, because this is what they want to do. This is because we're going to participate in some way, right? That's how we get food on the table and a roof over our heads. So we're going to participate in life. And if ego can make that into a misery, the thing that you have worked so hard to be able to do for a living, if it can turn that into a misery, wow. That's success for ego, right?
Mm-hmm. One last thing that just dropped in as you were saying that is when it, in that way, when you're paying attention to something closely like work, mm-hmm. I used to have a belief that in that focused place, conditioning is more subtle. It's more physical cues, and it's not saying, like, I hate what I'm doing right now. And so mm-hmm. I thought that I was more out of ego and more just kind of focused and absorbed in work, and I didn't realize how not present I was becoming so quickly when I was getting absorbed into work.
Yes. Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
Oh, it makes total sense. It's very subtle, and it makes complete sense. And, you know, Kate, the thing that reminds me of, or makes me think of, is this is what makes me a religious person, and I bet it does you too. When ego can do that to us, we forget that everything we have is coming from life, right? Your intelligence, the awareness, the attention, the ability to focus, all of the things that you do well because of the intelligence that's animating you.
Mm-hmm.
And when ego can slide in there and take that away from us, again, what a triumph for ego. That you keep coming back to that place of I am successful with what I do to the degree that I am present to the intelligence animating me, or not at least not letting ego interfere with it. That puts us in a place of appreciation and gratitude from which it's very difficult for ego to distract us.
Yes. Oh, that's beautifully articulated. Yes, thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have fun at work today, okay? Are you working
I
today?
Will. Thank okay. you. I love starting my day this way. Thank you.
Me too. Thank you, Kate.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Go happy.
Go happy.
Thanks, Kate. I love that last line, Sherry, what the ego does in places of intense concentration or focus is it's really a collapsed awareness state, whereas you said we're not present to what is animating us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me, I'll go quickly, okay? It's one of my favorite stories of all Zen practice. Years ago, this gal came to see me who is a research scientist at Stanford University. And she said, I want a Zen perspective on this. And she said, because there's a lot of guilt in this for me, and I want to see if I need to be feeling all this guilt or if I can let it go. And she said, here's how I do my research. She said, I read voraciously on my subject. And then I go into my office, I close the door, I put my feet up on my desk, and I wait for the answers to come. I said, sounds just downright intelligent to me. and she was describing exactly what we're talking about here. That realization that if we want to be brilliant, we want to be here. Because this is the only place brilliance is. If we want the answers to all the questions, we better be here. Because this is where the answers are. Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that brings us to the end of another great show, Sherry. And here is our assignment. What is the most loving, compassionate thing you could do for yourself right now?
Right now. Ooh, and we got to ask that right now. We got to ask that question all day long, right?
All day long.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, that's very good. All right. Well,
thank you,
Ashwini. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Sherry. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay. Bye-bye.